New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, December the 8th. There I am. December the 8th, 2024. And today on the program, we will talk about numbers. We will do a basic math, maybe some advanced math, maybe some math that I don't actually know how to do. It remains to be seen. We will discuss, NBC's ratings, yes, on Saturday night, ahead of Saturday night's main event returning, and WWE's business. And, of course, you have to talk about AEW's business. So let's go to AEW's business most recently. It's TV ratings. It's Dynamite ratings. Two of the lower ratings in Dynamite's history on two consecutive weeks. Now, one was... the night before Thanksgiving, and there was a live West Coast feed because of the college basketball that's happening on TBS. So maybe, you know, that one could be chalked up to not being taken that seriously, and it's one rating anyway. I don't take one rating all that seriously, but we do take trends, year-over-year differences, a number of weeks, you know, in a row, or where we have something like what we can put together in a table to show is that AEW Dynamite's TV ratings, the lowest 13, not total viewerships, but demo viewerships, Dynamite's lowest 13 P18 to 49 TV ratings. Sounds like a football stat. More of those later today. 13 of the lowest rated episodes of Dynamite ever. The 13 lowest ever are all within the last 6 months. And that's roughly half the time, I guess, right? Because there's what, about 26 weeks in a 6 month period, right? So that's roughly, you know, you're doing one of the 13 lowest ratings of your history to date within the last about half the time. In any case, suffice to say, TV ratings are down, and we have some year-over-year, what I call shadow charts here, and you can see the differences in mostly double digits compared to the same week of the prior year. In total viewership, it's been down every single week compared to the same week of the prior year. In the demo, it's most of the weeks. In it, the younger half of the demo, the 18 to 34, it's most of the weeks. It looks like there's 3 weeks here where in the same week of the prior year it was actually up, but the rest of them now here, we're almost through the calendar year, it's mostly red deltas here. We'll go into some more data here that I have not yet published. Exclusive data, sort of. Well, but first, what about cord cutting? Because that relates to what we're going to get into here. What about cord cutting? Now, can't this all be dismissed? I mean, Can you really be expected to have positive year-over-year differences? I mean, isn't everybody's ratings down because of cord cutting? And nobody besides the oldest people of our country are really subscribing, much less watching traditional television. Well, what is really the state of cord cutting? I've been digging deep into the MVPDs. I know some of you have been as well, digging into the pay TV carriers such as, let's list them off. These are the ones, some of these are estimated, but most of these, I'll go through them. Most of the big pay TV carriers, so more than the majority of the pay TV universe, actually are publicly traded companies, and they do report their subscribers here in the United States under the careful watch of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And that includes Comcast, Charter, Altice, Dish TV. And actually the Dish TV one is estimated because they no longer disclose subscribers for whatever reason. So we do, but we do have Comcast, Charter, Altice, Verizon, Frontier, Hulu, Live TV, Sling TV, which is owned by the Dish Network. Oh, Dish does too. What I'm thinking is DirecTV. In any case, Sling TV, Fubo, Cable One, not DirecTV. That's been estimated here by me. Kageko, which I think actually is a parent company of what their actual cable system is regardless. And then we're assuming about 8% of this is not included among the universe. Short, long story short, how much is pay TV down year over year? Based on these numbers and based on the trajectory of the occasional disclosures that YouTube TV has been making, as YouTube TV appears to be a pretty, it appears to be now the fourth largest pay TV carrier. And that is making up for some of the losses that everybody else in the traditional universe is experiencing. Nonetheless, how much is the pay TV universe down? As you can see here in red text, highlighting yellow, the pay TV universe was down in Q3, 5%. 5%. From the prior Q3. So you could say that how much, and that's going to closely correlate to the availability of TV networks like TBS, TNT, USA Network for that matter. Down by 5%. So if you want to put a handicap on it, you want to put some sort of offsetting factor on the TV ratings declines, at least when it comes to the overall audience, maybe 5% is appropriate. But you know what? We could use that 5% to try to offset and understand these declines, explain away perhaps these declines in AWTV ratings. But you know what? That's not enough. Let's go to an even better metric. Because Nielsen does provide to the Nielsen customers who pay whatever it is, tens of thousands of dollars a year or whatever, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for the Nielsen subscriptions. And we have obtained throughout the year some of that data. And we do know that, of course, TNT and TBS are declining in their household coverage. They're down to about, in terms of total people, household coverage, they're down to about 65 million households at this point. TNT and TBS are basically almost the same in terms of household coverage, very small differences between them. So there's the households, and remember, there's about 120 million households in the United States. Let's see, you know, as I said, 65 million of them have access to TBS or TNT, but that's not the number of people that have access to TBS and TNT in those television households. We have separate, everybody's waiting for this, universe estimates for P2 plus for people over the age of two. We have separate universe estimates for the coveted 18 to 49 ad demo. And you can see those lines trending across time here from the beginning of AW Dynamite's history to the present. And basically, so the demo is down to about, and this is in thousands, is down to about 50 million people in the demo in the United States have access to TBS and TNT, around 150 million overall. I am lacking. Now, we have to be very clear here. Some of this is estimated by me because I have an incomplete data set. I am missing the last 6 months of 2023, and I'm missing the last 6 months of 2024. But I do have the rest of the timeline from October 2019 to the present. And you've all come here for the R-squareds. Those will be revealed later. But first, let's look at how this is actually trending and the total audience. So this is a coverage rating. What you want to, if you're concerned with cord cutting and if you want to know to what degree AW Dynamite's TV ratings declines can be explained away because of the lack of availability of their TV networks, this is the metric that you want to look at, is the coverage rating. And what does that look like? I've got these averaged out by month. Remember, December here is just one episode, but this is not at the all-time low, right? The early Wednesday Night War period is lower than where they are right now. They're in the high 0.30s, which is the lowest since roughly the end of the Wednesday Night War, which is, if I use my mouse here and show you, if you're watching in video, which is right about here. The Wednesday Night War ends in April 2021, and the rating grows and peaks, of course, fall 2021, but it is at the lowest point post Wednesday Night War when they're not going head to head with another pro wrestling show. The demo, it's fairly similar here as we show the demo here in green. Not at the lowest point ever. There was this point back here in the early days of COVID in the spring of 2020 where they were doing a lower 18 to 49 coverage rating. And to be clear again, in case you're not getting it, the coverage rating is basically here's the number of people who watched, whether it's in the demo or whether it's among people of any age, 2+. This is the number of people divided by the number of people who could have actually watched because they live in TV households that get that network, TNT or TBS, depending on whether it's before 2022 or not. And again, let's be transparent. I had to estimate a total of 12 months out of this, what is this, five plus timeline period. But I'm pretty confident in these estimates because we've got R squareds here that are close to perfect. We've got a 0.998. I got really excited when I saw this. I got a 0.99 R squared on this for the P2, 0.9964 R squared for the demo coverage rating correlation between my estimates, because I do have a lot of the actual coverage ratings data. And then I did a, of course, as we all do every other day, I did a linear regression and estimated what these remaining missing data points would be. And then I took those away and I said, okay, give me all the data points, the rows, basically, where I have an estimate and an actual number, and how close are they? How strong is the relationship? The relationship is almost perfectly strong. And we'll do the lower half of the demo too in a moment. But let's look at what is now. Now let's look at this in a way that truly accounts for cord cutting, truly accounts for the declining availability of TNT and TBS. What are the year-over-year differences when you take all of that into account? What have we got here? We've got, we still end up with year-over-year declines in total viewership and in the demo. Really, the demo picture looks better. And even in this year, they were having single-digit positive increases in the demo of 1849 for January, February, March, April. The number of people in the demo who could have watched because they live in homes with TBS, that actually increased by single digits of percent in January, in February, in March, in April, but not in May. In May, we get, it's down 9%, and then we're into double digits for the rest of the year. The story is negative earlier when it comes to people of all ages. I won't read through the numbers because they're there. That'll probably make for poor audio. But if you're watching in video, you can see where the positive differences are and the red negative differences are. The negative trend line starts with a negative 1% in December, and then it goes from there to 5%. But another takeaway I would have here is not just that it has been negative since December of last year for the total audience and since May of this year for the demo, but that decline is accelerating, especially in the total audience, where it's single digits in the early part of this year, but then in June it starts to decline by double digits. Okay, and I highlighted this last December monthly average year-over-year difference in black and noted. Look, this is just one episode. That is double digits too, but it's just one episode so far because that's where we are in the actual timeline of real life history. Here's a chart where you can see where the negative and positive differences are. I think it's largely telling the same story. And then we can look at the lower half of the demo, 18 to 34, which when I've looked at it over the years, 18 to 34 really stands out to me as relevant. Here's the younger half of the demo. Here's young adults. How much are you actually capturing young adults? Because when we see big ratings, when we see big increases in ratings, or we see the big debut of a TV show, the audience that's tuning in, that's not tuning in at other times, is this younger portion of the audience who maybe their entertainment time is more heavily competed for than others. In any case, we did an R squared here, almost perfect. relationship here, a 0.9885. Basically, if you round it to two decimal places, that is a 0.99. In any case, so we'll do the 18 to 34 numbers as well. And what we see is in April, it starts to decline and decline by double digits. And it looks like an accelerating decline here, too. So again, to look at all of these year-over-year differences over time, whether you're just focusing on the total audience overall, whether you're focusing on the ad demo or the lower half of the ad demo, a takeaway here is that this decline is not just happening, but accelerating. It's getting a little worse over. It has gotten a little worse over time in the recent 6 months, 12 months or so. Now, I bring this up why? Because it was to be rude, probably, but because to reflect on the argument that AEW's fan popularity is on the decline, even when we adjust for the availability of the network, which we all know is in decline. Even when you adjust for that factor with a coverage rating, which is exactly what that metric does, you still end up with seeing negative differences year over year, and not just negative differences year over year, but negative differences that have gotten worse as time has gone on. Okay, what about live attendance? Maybe live attendance is doing better. Now, we have to recognize that on this past Wednesday, on December 4th, in Indianapolis, or just outside of Indianapolis, the final estimate from WrestleTix is 3,096, which is up 3% from the last time they were in Indianapolis for a Dynamite. So that is a exception to what is commonly happening here with these same market, same event type differences. Comparisons. I think this is the fairest way to look at live events, to say it's the same market. You know, every market has its advantages and disadvantages. Let's look at, every event type has its advantages and disadvantages. We're not comparing pay-per-views to Dynamites. We're not comparing Los Angeles to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We're comparing the same city to the same event type. And what we see is, going back further in time, besides this slightly positive Indianapolis date, we do see mostly negative differences. This Indianapolis date was the first positive comparison that we can make since Nashville Dynamite in July. That was a Dynamite, yes. So Indianapolis is actually just the sixth positive comparison for AEW live events that we can make this year. Again, mark to market, same event. Because there's the others were what? Indianapolis, Nashville, Chicago Dynamite, Boston Dynamite in March. And we have sort of a weird one in Jacksonville with the number of times they've gone to Jacksonville. That was up by a massive 85% at Daly's Place when they went there early this year in January. But other than those six, the rest, and there's 34 total, six out of 34 of these market-to-market same event comparisons have been negative. That's six out of 34 that are positive, the rest negative. That's 82% of these market-to-market comparisons on the year, on the calendar year, have been negative. And we can look at just the straightforward average of estimated tickets distributed. Again, all of this information is coming from WrestleTix when we're talking about live events. But we can look at just the straightforward averages. And what we find is that, over time, this collision number that we start off with in the first quarter that collision existed is just a couple weeks. So we can probably dismiss that. But even if we dismiss that, we're still starting off at a point for collision that's at about 4,300, and it declines sequentially, flattens out here in Q2 of this year, and then falls again, of course, in Q3 of this year, where it goes down to as low as 2,000 on average. That's where they're running Arlington and the Esports Stadium venue, which is a smaller venue, and they did the residence there, and you're staying there with the same market over and over again. But okay, we're back in Q4, and so far in Q4, collision is averaging 2,400, which is significantly down from the 3,000 level that they were doing earlier this year or late in last year. Okay, and Dynamite now averaging quarter to date 3,200. We've got a few weeks left here in Q4, but averaging 3,200, which is going to, at the moment, is the lowest average for a quarter yet, as they've been upwards in the 5,000 range in the glory days of 2021 and 2022, going down to the 4,000 range last year, and now into the 3,000 range. Okay. But I know what you're thinking. Is this really fair? I mean, you've got to stop comparing AEW to WWE and evaluate AEW on its own merits. So let's get WWE off the screen here. Actually, WWE is not on the slide, but let's look at something else like coverage ratings. And okay, WWE is not on this screen either. But if we just look at coverage ratings, not only for Dynamite now this isn't the demo. You know, this is the thing that historically has been emphasized to the media that the demo is more important, and that's understandable because that's where the ad revenue comes from, and AEW is probably not strongly contributing to WBD or TBS TNT's carriage rights negotiations that they make with carriers. So it's probably most of the value that they're providing is in the form of ad revenue. So let's look at the 18 to 49, not national rating, not the straight up rating that we talk about more commonly, but the coverage rating that actually does adjust for the availability of the network. And what we see is Dynamite is down in the last 2 years. It's down 9% year to date. It's down 4% in 2023. Collision is also down year over year. Of course, that's comparing a partial year in 2023 to this year. But under that comparison, it is down 4%. Rampage is down by 2% in this year after some double-digit declines in the prior 2 years. And even the occasional Battle of the Belts is down in this year by 20% after being down by 14% in the prior year. Again, all of this is adjusting for the availability of the network. And what you could say to this is that, well, this is just more content. Maybe it's cannibalizing itself. And I think that is a fair retort. But looking at the ranking, which is really when it comes to media value, when it comes to thinking about the financial future of the company and the media deals that they might be able to make, this is the metric that is, I think, the most important, or at least among the data that we can actually conjure up. This is the one that is most reflective of media value, because highly ranked programs get great deals even if their TV viewership straightforward is on the decline. And Dynamite, despite its straightforward viewership being on the decline, has just in October made a really strong media deal that will likely make them financially viable, maybe as early as next year. And what we can see here, this is a much less exciting but much more important chart that I'm showing, this line chart here, where you see the stability, if anything, the increasing strength of Raw and SmackDown. You see AEW Dynamite in late last year improving its rank here. On the average, this is a trailing 52-week median. This is the way that I chose to slice the data. Preemptions excluded, of course, and it looks to be, it's strengthening its rank here towards the end of last year. And what you see now, this is clearly a slightly negative slope over time, which suggests that that ranking is weakening a little bit. Now it's still in the top 60 or 70 shows on its week. On average, or on a median basis, I should say, it's still ranked significantly above NXT, whether we're looking at NXT before or after the CW move. And actually, I think because this is a trailing median, they might be actually getting closer now. So if we look at this chart that just looks at the median weekly P18 to 49 ranking among all cable and broadcast in prime time, another NFL stat, very, very narrow criteria, but this is the criteria that we're able to have the data for. And if we had access to all data whatsoever, we might look at this differently, but this is the data that is publicly available. So that's why we choose this, apparently narrow criteria. In any case, actually I think prime time is a good way to assess this in any case. And what we have in the quarter to date is a median rank on the week of 92, and that is slightly better than NXT's rank on the week, which is entirely on CW for NXT. And we see pretty strong stability for Raw and SmackDown. Of course, SmackDown is doing considerably lower at 36 since its move to the USA Network. Collision and Rampage, have weakened over time. Rampage now into the 200s, which is where it was way back here when it was doing better ratings. In any case, the thing that we really need to think about when it comes to media value is the flagship is Dynamite, the show that is drawing, that is ranking by far the highest among AEW shows. Okay. I will say there are other areas too where you can say, like, look, AEW's not doing that bad. You can look at estimated tickets distributed for AEW pay-per-views, and AEW pay-per-views are still performing pretty strongly in terms of the ticket sales, the way that they're able to move tickets. That's what tickets distributed represents, paid plus comps, but presumably the majority of these tickets that are being moved are actual sales. And their pay-per-view ticket sales are still doing in the high thousands. This year they did, this is an average, so it's taking together all in, which is probably not the best way to look at this, but looking over time, they're in the high thousands for their typical arena pay-per-views. So we'll see what happens as the general on sale, I believe, for All In Texas happens this Monday. The pre-sale has already happened. I think WrestleTix will be on top of it, and we'll see if they're able to do a strong advance here, as this is when the majority, I think, of the big times for ticket sales is at the very beginning when tickets go on sale, and then at the very end, and it's not that much activity in between. But we'll see if they're able to fill up a stadium for All In Texas, which is in July, in Arlington, where the Texas Rangers play at Global Life Field. We'll be watching closely. Of course, AEW had to move their Australia Stadium event to Arena event, which is coming up this February. So we will see what happens. We'll look at WWE as well, and how is WWE doing, especially in this Q4. We're now in a quarter where the changes are happening for all three of the major WWE programs, whether it's Raw going from 3 to 2 hours, whether it's SmackDown going from Fox, a high coverage broadcast network, to USA Network, a cable network with that's in fewer homes, and CW, which is NXT's new home instead of USA Network, where it was previously, where viewership has basically stayed the same. In terms of year-over-year differences, we do see a significant drop in total viewership for SmackDown, now moving, still in the same night, but just a different network, 32% lower from the same quarter of the prior year when it was on Fox. Gives you an idea of how strong Fox was. Despite things not working out on Fox, I was discussing why SmackDown left, why Fox decided not to renew, or at least not to bid aggressively for SmackDown. And I think it's largely that Fox probably and NW probably willing to let them believe that Fox would be this enormous downstream boon to WWE, and that because Fox is such a high profile network, that their marketing machine and their profile in culture and in media would really help WWE grow their viewership and deliver higher viewership than SmackDown ever actually ended up delivering. And therefore, Fox was not able to extract the revenue, the value, the carriage fees, maybe, that they thought they were going to extract, and therefore it was not a worthwhile investment when they decided to put more of that TV time into college football or other things. And NXT down by 5% year over year. The demo is a more generous story for NXT. And Raw is actually, in terms of total viewership, is the harder metric to move. Raw is actually up 5% from the prior year, a year where it was a 3-hour show instead of a 2-hour show. I believe that the 2-hour difference is helping, but only helping slightly, maybe 5%. But I did the math ahead of the 2-hour move. And if you just mathematically removed the third hour, which is not a perfect way to forecast what was happening there, but if you just remove the third hour, you do get something around a low single digit percent positive difference, because the third hour is less watched. Average tickets distributed for WWE events. We are seeing some leveling off of Raw and SmackDown, even as this house show number is slightly up in the quarter. But we are seeing numbers that are still around 10,000 for Raw and SmackDown on average in this Q4 so far, 2 months through the quarter, a little more than 2 months. And in terms of year-over-year differences, Raw is actually up from the same quarter where of last year, where they were doing an average of 8,800, according to WrestleTix's estimates of tickets distributed. SmackDown is slightly down from the 10,400 to the 10,000 flat that they're doing now. Higher ticket prices, I'm sure, is an effect here, as WWE's as people complain on Reddit and elsewhere all the time. These ticket prices are just too high. Well, supply and demand is a hell of a thing. So the ticket sales are probably, in terms of revenue, continuing to grow. Well, even if it's squeezing a little bit, if it's squeezing the attendance a little bit lower. So that's their business. And if we look at, I can look at their market to market differences. I didn't prepare this on the slide, but I do have a spreadsheet that will show us this. And we can see, if I make this, I guess, even bigger here. And we can see here, SmackDown in Minneapolis, up 27%. But then you have some other market-to-market comparisons, like Salt Lake City, the prior week SmackDown, down 25%. So it's sort of all over the place here. This SmackDown in Buffalo they did that I stopped by, which they had not done a SmackDown in Buffalo in about 2 years, and it was almost double from the prior SmackDown that they did back in late 2022 in the early first resignation period, just before Vince is about to force his way back. But this international tour was basically all negative comparisons or flat comparisons. So we are seeing some, depending on how old the comp is, we are seeing some big positive comparisons. Again, especially for older comps, we are seeing some negative or slightly negative comparisons, as I assume a factor here is higher ticket prices leading to slightly or significantly less volume, but probably similar, if not higher, revenue. I would bet higher. We can look too at these numbers, which, by the way, for Dynamite this past week. Dynamite this past week, December 4th, Wednesday, this most recent Wednesday, 586,000 was the number, 586,000, 0.17, which was remarkably similar to the Thanksgiving Eve episode that may have been impacted by the live West Coast feed, which was 536 and 0.15. So not a huge positive difference. That Thanksgiving Eve episode was the lowest demo in the normal time slot in Dynamite's history. So if we look back at, now we go back to the front of these slides and go through things that we've already gone through here and look at the quarter hours. I don't have great takeaways here for these quarter hours. But just to say that this was, there was a lot of red boxes lit up here because these were much more negative quarter to quarter changes in viewership than we are used to in these quarters, where, yes, it's normal that most of the quarters lose viewership, but not to this extent. We had an 11% loss for the 8:30 quarter hour, a 14% loss for the 9:30 quarter hour, a 13% loss for the 9:45 quarter hour. The report is here on the screen. I won't read through it. You can get the reports, of course, by signing up at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. But this was a more leaking show than usual in terms of viewership. Raw this past week, with the big New Day angle involving Big E, I think, you know, undeniably popped a quarter hour here, as it was up 14% from the prior quarter, in a quarter that usually does grow, because this was the top of the hour, this is the 9 o'clock hour, where usually viewership does grow by about 7% or 8% in the demo. This was up by 14% or 17% in the demo. This was not the peak of the show. The peak of the show was the second quarter hour, which was benefited by having no ad breaks in it, as they did at least the first 45 minutes or so, or almost 45 minutes, that was ad free as advertised. So the New Day angle clearly, clearly popping some interest here. And we do have NXT quarter hours, as Eric Bischoff made his special appearance on NXT this past week, and the quarter that he was in did buck the trend, up 4%, as opposed to the trend, which is usually down 2% at the 8:45 quarter. And it was actually up significantly more in the demo, up 12% in the demo when this quarter usually draws 2%, a 2% increase. That was the high point for the quarter. In the demo, a 0.14 demo rating, 187,000 viewers in 1849. The prior quarter, I know people are saying, but you drew the lowest NXT rating yet in total viewership. That is almost the case. I think that might be the case in the demo, which this demo overall was a 0.13 for the 2-hour show. The prior week, where are we here? The prior week, the Julia and Kalani Jordan segment was the peak of the show and grew the audience by 5%. And I think that is a thing that I would look at as a genuine positive difference based on the content. The content, I believe, drew that. The height of the show and in a quarter that usually loses viewership by 5%, grew viewership by 5%. So that appears to be significant. We also had the Eric Bischoff angle in here somewhere, I think. Yes, the Eric Bischoff angle was also in here, which lost the audience by 11%. This is the video angle the week before, lost the audience by 11% in a quarter that usually does 4%. And down by 21% in a quarter that usually loses by 3% in the demo. This did not light up under our initial formatting because there was this significant growth in the prior quarter hour. So that's what happened there. Here's the YouTube trend lines for the clips for this most recent week's NXT. And we do have the full segments on top with Roxanne Perez and then the full highlights. And then the Bischoff speaks his mind on Trick Williams and Ridge Holland, significantly a wide gap over everything else, all the other clips on the show. And then Saturday night's main event. And I want to look at what the historical Saturday night's main event ratings were. We're not going back to the 80s or the 90s for that matter, but we will look at the most recent Saturday night's main event on NBC in 2006, 2007, and the one episode in 2008. And the numbers were at the time 5.2 million, let's call it 4.2 million, 2.7 million, 5.6 million, 2.4 million. And these numbers, which are, you know, how much time is that? That's, this is a math show. That's 14 plus 2, 16 years ago or more. These numbers might be attainable. I mean, these look like, especially these two that are under 3 million, these look like high SmackDown numbers, maybe. The question is whether you're going to do something that's comparable to Raw or SmackDown if it was on a broadcast network in a time slot that's not the home of a weekly show, although it is the home of premium live events. The demo in the same PT49 national rating that we're used to looking at, the sequence of this of these five Saturday night's main events from 2006 to 2008 are 1.82, 1.47, 1.25, 1.38, 0.75. 0.75 would be really high for either Raw or SmackDown at this point. I think they have done some 0.7 ratings for SmackDown in its peaks in recent years. So this is NBC. This is broadcast. So there presumably will be that power there. And presumably they'll market this and promote it as they already have. It could come, I guess what I'm saying is it's conceivable that it will come close to this 2008 number from, you know, 16 years ago. We'll see what happens. Now, what is the, what defines success here, I would look at, of course, what is the replacement programming? What is NBC actually delivering on a Saturday night? And here's what they've been delivering on a Saturday night in terms of ratings in recent times. This is just Saturdays that we're looking here, just Saturdays, just in prime time. And, you know, in this month, they've been airing a lot of, or not in this month, but in November, they've been airing a lot of Big Ten football or Notre Dame football with a 0.56, 2.7 million viewers. That is the average for November in primetime. That demo rating, I think, is attainable. I don't know if that total viewership is attainable. But going back into the other months of the year, 0.45, 0.52. August was huge, presumably with the Olympics, 0.94. going back further into time into, let's say, January, 0.31, 0.19, I would say those are easily attainable numbers for a well-promoted Saturday night's main event. If we look at December of last year, because we have no December data for this year yet, but if we look at December of last year, the average was 1.78 million viewers and a 0.25 in the demo. I think they can do that for a Saturday night's main event, probably without much problem, because that's well below what either Raw or SmackDown are doing right now. So this seems sensible, right? That you can do a Saturday night's main event, and it's not going to push out something that's more valuable, like a football game, college football game. But if you put it in the right spots, it's probably doing better viewership than whatever else would be in its place.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay. Now we've gone already 40 minutes. And question and answers will begin. These questions were sent to mailbag@wrestlingonics.com. And first we have Andrew M. Andrew sent this question over a week ago, because we did not do a podcast last week. So this is some 2 weeks ago. He sent this. He says, "Hello, Brandon. This is another question that came to mind while listening to WrestleNomics. You were discussing the failed podcast bookers and how Tony Khan was able to do what they couldn't by being an outsider. My question is, if Tony Khan stepped down as head of creative," which I had not deeply read this before preparing for this podcast this weekend. So I had not read this before Wednesday, before we discussed exactly that thing on Pollock and Thurston. But Andrew says, "My question is, if Tony Khan stepped down as head of creative, do you think the new head should be someone who is a fan of wrestling but never worked in the business like Tony, or a wrestler with some creative experience but maybe more open-minded than some older counterparts? An example of the latter could be Chris Hero or Brian Danielson. I know Hero is part of the creative group, but he's not the lead booker." I'm not familiar with what exactly Chris Hero's role is, other than I understood he's a producer. But I think those are the two names that come to mind for me. And in particular, Brian Danielson, because I think he would, you know, he already clearly has had a leadership position in the company for quite some time. And I think he's a person that everyone respects and would listen to. And I think, you know, clearly has a strong wrestling mind. I think he would be the ideal choice. I think Chris Hero would be a real choice as well. I think Brian Danielson would provide what Tony doesn't in terms of having the authority to tell people what to do and maybe pushing back on wrestlers who want to make changes to match finishes and things like that. I think like Brian would be the best choice if he's willing. I know he has said he wants to spend time with his family now, and that's why he's not a full-time wrestler anymore. But if he were willing to do it, I think that would be the best choice. As far as like a fan, I don't know. I think that's related to what you're saying there. I think that's why Will Washington is a good person to have included, which they did. He's not somebody who is among the tenured people who have inhabited wrestling creative in the United States, I think to its detriment, throughout the last two decades plus, three decades really. And I think that Tony was able to come in with no wrestling experience and immediately be a good booker for years, I think is evident that there are people, if they have sort of a worldly love for wrestling and who have studied it for many years, even if they haven't worked in it, can be better, not just good, but better than the incumbents who have all the experience in the world. And I think that's just illustrative of how wrong-headed wrestling education is, wrestling wisdom is, and how, you know, allegiance to power and to authority wrestling is versus putting people in positions who actually are good and effective at their jobs, because there's always the subjective, there's no scoreboard, and there's always the subjective decisions that lead people to approve of power and incumbency and personality and the people that they grew up watching on TV. In any event, Eric K. asks, we know WrestleNomics reporting, that AEW live show attendance is down year over year, and that TV ratings are also down year over year, even higher than the rate of cord cutting, as we demonstrated earlier in this program. The one business metric we no longer seem to have clarity on is AEW pay-per-view numbers, especially since Bleacher Report stopped carrying pay-per-views following All Out. Bleacher Report did the most pay-per-view buys for AEW and reported numbers quickly, according to the Wrestling Observer. The Observer noted in the December 2nd issue that, quote, every platform has increased, end quote, for WrestleDream and Full Gear, but, quote, not enough to make up for the loss of Bleacher Report, so they are doing lower numbers due to the loss of Bleacher Report, end quote. After that long setup, here is my question. Is it safe to say that AEW PPV buys have dropped below 100,000 per show? Eric has provided his notes, his excerpts from The Observer, which I have put in the notes section of my slides here, and I will now undergo the task of trying to understand Dave writing about data. Thank you for tasking me with this arduous task, Eric. So some of Eric's notes here, I will not read all of them, but I will read some of them. In October 21, Dave wrote, with late buys counted, All Out is looking like 105,000. So this, in theory, would be 106 to 170. He's talking about All Out. However, we have no real gauge of streaming numbers, which are the vast majority of the buys these days. If the other streaming carriers made up for the Bleacher Report loss and the streaming results were up slightly, like the TV pay-per-view results were, so really, as far as the overall number, it may be a while past the number looks to be around my expectations. If other streaming carriers made up the Bleacher Report loss and streaming results were up slightly, like TV and pay-per-view results were. Okay, thank you. Okay, then October 28th, he writes, All Out, which would be about 105,000 buys, accurate, which is, so let's just put some data on the screen, try to ground this in some sort of reference. So these are the numbers that I use when I do my program with Josh Nason on the quarter, just looking at AEW's business by quarter. And these are the numbers that I go with. Let's be very clear. When it comes to these pay-per-view buys, I put a question mark here for a reason, because it's really hard to verify these and to put some real strength behind these numbers. Basically, the only one who's reporting them are the Observer, is Dave. It seems like Dave has, and I wish he would sort of explain this a little bit. It seems like Dave has a source in the cable industry or the traditional TV industry that has access to some pay-per-view information. And it sounds like he's extrapolating whatever sample that source can provide him with onto the pay-per-view universe. Again, it's hard to understand or say more without a further explanation of what the methodology is that Dave's applying. But these are the numbers that we have. We do have about 100,000. I think these are rounded to, well, in some cases, they are rounded to the nearest 5,000 or 10,000 in any case. 100,000 is the number that we've assumed in here in this table for All Out and for WrestleDream. In October, we have 105,000, which I think jives with this, these notes from the Observer. The Observer numbers might be a little higher. He does have WrestleDream on the November 18th issue saying WrestleDream would, let's just read this, based upon WrestleDream on pay-per-view, based on updated numbers, WrestleDream on PPV is up 10.8%, a very specific delta. 10.8% from All Out, but as noted with the loss of Bleacher Report, if All Out did 103,000 buys, this would not be a predictor of 114,000, I see, but it is a better sign than weeks prior. Okay. And then he says on December 2nd, 2 weeks ago, he says, What we do know is that every platform has increased over the past two shows, but not enough to make up the loss of Bleacher Report. So they are doing lower total numbers due to the loss and perhaps loss of product interest as well. But this does at this point look to beat WrestleDream. So he's talking about full gear. But it's close enough that it's not a lock. And I wouldn't think this wouldn't be the AEW show to do enormous late buys. WrestleDream ended up being 11.4% up from All Out. But All Out was the last show that Bleacher Report did. And then in the most recent episode, Eric notes, he wrote, full gear is as of the same number of days after the show. I think after the show is now up 5.7% from WrestleDream. So it's very likely the overall number is up from that show. Whether that makes up for Bleacher Report losses or how much is unclear. It's up 9.1% on TV buys. That means traditional TV buys, I think, from All Out at the same point in time. But that show still had Bleacher Report and likely far more streaming buys. 44.4% of the TV buyers of Full Gear also bought WrestleDream, and 55.6% of them didn't. Again, some description of the sourcing and some explanation of the methodology would be really helpful to try to understand this. I guess with Eric, so let's try to ask answer Eric's question. Is it safe to say that AEW pay-per-view buys have dropped below 100,000 per show? I after reading that, I have no idea, Eric. truly, this is the answer to that. And there's just very little public information that we can look to try to support this. You could do Google Trends, but that's not super reliable. Is it under 100,000? You think for full gear, maybe? I have no strong sense. If Dave has a source that is giving him cable pay-per-view information that is perhaps a sample of the traditional pay-per-view universe, that would be a good indicator. But I reading through what Dave just reported there, I'm just not sure how to interpret it. With that being said, we can look at the running. What I want to do now is, I don't know, answer my own question, which is our pay-per-view buys up on the total for the year, or are they going to be up? And the running total, it's basically, the answer is going to be yes, because we have two pay-per-views here not accounted for in the case of Full Gear and World's End. And we're already at here a pay-per-view buys ? Total of 936, which is above the same point of the prior year. So this will be somewhere well over a million buys with two more pay-per-views. Even if they're disasters and only draw 50,000 each, it's going to be well over the mark of last year. So more pay-per-view events, more buys, more revenue, and that is one of the other good points about AEW's consumer business that you can point out. On average through October, it looks like they're very similar to last year, only slightly down. I've got 134,000 on average ? Versus last year, 137,000. So the years prior, they were up to over 150,000 on average. They will be lower. Of course, there's more pay-per-views in here. Again, the total is going to be higher, but the average is about the same so far. And maybe this average will be brought down by weaker buys in these last two, maybe. But 134. So point being here is that this is the most hardcore fan. This is the most dedicated fan who's actually willing to drop $50, whatever it might be, maybe $20 on Triller. But this is willing to pay for a specific event. And these events continue to be really well received. People, I think, trust that they're going to get a really strong show with really strong matches. And this is the audience that is diminishing least, right? If we, I don't know, if we say what's 130, let's be aggressive, divided by 150 minus one, that's only down 13%. I guess that's close to some of these coverage ratings we're seeing in terms of deltas. So maybe it is somewhat reflective of the TV audience decline from 2023 to 2022, but pretty stable from year to year with the information that we can. I'm shrugging my shoulders to say, yeah, maybe this is it. So thank you, Eric. Griffin asks, good afternoon, Brandon. Have you heard of any updates on AEW's Canadian TV deal? It's been 5 years since they announced the deal with TSN, and they haven't announced any extensions. With the WWE leaving Sportsnet, is there any chance AEW will jump to the better sports broadcaster? Short answer is I don't know. Speculation answer is that makes sense. And I think that's true broadly for AEW having international opportunities to replace vacancies that WWE is leaving around the world because of the transition to Netflix. And that's going to continue over the next couple of years, I would say, is, you know, India will be, I believe, transitioned to Netflix. That is basically the number two, probably number two market, at least for WWE. So it's something that I could see happening, but I do not have any answers for you at this point. And I know there are issues with, I believe, Collision and Rampage not being available on the main channel, right? So thanks for the question. And we go to Delmar. Are there still growth opportunities for NXT on CW when it comes to NXT not growing its audience? I do still wonder if it was a missed opportunity on WWE's part, not capitalizing on the 800,000 wrestling fans. I think he's talking about the increment from SmackDown that were watching SmackDown on Fox. While CW is a low profile network, and I have to imagine NXT could have attracted maybe 150,000 of said viewers, because if you have access to Fox, you may likely have CW along with it. I think that's a fair assumption. However, with no promoting on Fox for obvious reasons, a lack of awareness, an unfamiliar night, and the Fox deal ending 1 month early, I have to imagine the vast majority just don't have clear knowledge of NXT being on network TV. Now, depending on how Saturday Night's Main Event does on NBC, that could be a great opportunity to promote NXT, whether it's 30-second commercials, graphics, etc., and capitalize on trying to capture folks that don't have cable. I think there's a major factor here in that it's NXT and it's the third brand. It is the developmental brand. It is not the stars of SmackDown or Raw for that matter. Is there still opportunity to make this viewership grow dramatically? Not based on distribution, maybe on content, but they've already done a lot of improvement in terms of capturing an audience through your content. I think already in the last couple of years, as evident from the increases in TV ratings that we saw on the USA Network when distribution was the same, the night was the same, the time slot was the same. I think this is like sort of just what it does. This is what a developmental TV show, whether you love it or not, this is what an NXT TV show does on CW, even though it's on broadcast. And maybe that's just, it's not so much about the transmission platform that is broadcast versus cable. Yes, Fox and CW are both broadcast networks, but CW is not Fox, is not the marketing machine of Fox, is all I can really say there. Because it's remarkable that, you know, look at SmackDown's viewership on the USA Network. It's down 30% from the same period of the prior year, just by going from going to USA from Fox, which is evident of how much Fox was helping their viewership. Not just the household coverage, which is huge, which is tens of millions of homes, 10, 15 million homes, something like that. But also it's a brand and it's a company that can really help you promote your product. CW is doing that too. I know there's crossover things happening on CW related to NXT, but it's not what Fox is. Right. Okay. And then Bruce Lord says, hi, Brandon. I've heard you and a number of other savvy folks describe the WWE ID program as having the side benefit of heading off future antitrust accusations against the company, in addition to the obvious competitive advantage with regards to AEW and the like. I admit that I'm pretty ignorant of the corporate logic of late capitalism. Rest in peace, Frederick Jameson. So can you explain to me how a program which has the dual effects of impeding a competitor's access to talent, as well as establishing formal franchise or farm team style relationships with training schools, could be seen as proof of a healthy and diverse marketplace? A fair question. My first reaction is it just depends on how much a judge or the FTC, unlikely, but it just depends on how much the decider of fact understands the wrestling business, I would say. I guess, I don't know, and I'm not a lawyer here at all, of course. I would think that even if you are reaping competitive advantages over AEW, there's still the argument that, yeah, the cost of depriving our strongest competitor, we are helping the number 3, 4, 5 and 100 in the case of maybe indie schools, that we're, you know, we're because antitrust is ultimately about, not about what's good for the businesses. Antitrust is, under my understanding, is supposed to be about what's good for the consumer. And is it good for the consumer? This is what W would probably argue, something along these lines of, is it, it's good for the wrestling fan that we're helping these indie companies. We're helping indie wrestlers. We're helping indie wrestlers become better wrestlers. And they go and they wrestle for all these other companies. They wrestle for these indie companies, and they're able to say, I'm a WID wrestler, and they're able to draw more interest towards their company because of that. We're helping cultivate a business, an industry that's even better because of the sort of networking that we're facilitating here. And wrestling, that is, the wrestling fan is better off because they have more interesting indie wrestling shows to check out. We're also cooperating with TNA. It's been a while, I think, actually, since they've cooperated with TNA. But we also cooperated with TNA, and I might put together a spreadsheet that shows, look at the benefits maybe to TV ratings. I have no idea what the answer is here, but look at the benefits that TNA has experienced. TNA is going to book UBS Arena. They're going to book a major arena for the first time in God knows how long. And we take credit for a lot of that. We're really facilitating a better experience and more diverse options for the wrestling fan, because they're able to see a higher profile TNA now. They're able to experience a higher profile, higher quality independent wrestling program now, because we gave the rub to these indie wrestlers. Even if we're, and I think they would say too, we have probably a first refusal with these wrestlers. We're not even necessarily depriving them from AEW. AEW could just outbid us. And they surely they have the funding. Maybe there's an argument the other way too, you know, and I think this is a smart question to raise. Do I have anything else in my notes here? Yeah, I think that's largely it. And we go to, one Chris H, who may or may not be a former, co-host of this podcast, who asks a very important question here, which will be our final question for the day. A sealed ionization chamber is calibrated at 22 C. I think that's Celsius. You use this chamber to take measurements of absorbed dose in a room at 24 C, but no correction for temperature and pressure is made. What will be the resulting error in measured dose? Well, as everyone knows, I mean, it's a pretty easy question to answer. If you want to determine the measured dose, because of that happens because of the temperature difference, you need to consider the effect of the temperature on the ionization chamber readings. And the readings from the sealed ionization chamber depend on the density of the, and let's pull up this diagram here, depend on the density of the gas inside the chamber. So that's going to be affected by temperature changes. The gas density is inversely proportional, of course, to the absolute temperature in Kelvin, according to the ideal gas law, which we all learned in kindergarten about. Therefore, if there's an increase in temperature reduces the gas density, which of course in turn reduces the ionization chamber reading, since the number of ion pairs produced depends on the gas density. So we do a math formula like this, which is you calculate the calibration temperature, you calculate the measurement temperature, and then you do a gas density correction factor. I won't go over all these amazing formulas in audio here, but suffice to say, the error ends up being 0.67, lower than the true value. So if you would like to send more medical device related math problems for us to solve here on this program, you can email mailbag@wrestlenomics.com. Next week, this program will be for subscribers only. And you can sign up at patreon.com/wrestlenomics. Or perhaps you would like to advocate for a new head of creative of Wrestlenomics and present your arguments as such at that time. So we'll be back. Oh, here's for our send off here today. Here is WrestleMania at SoFi Stadium in, I believe, 2023. And here is the LA Rams Stadium, SoFi Stadium, as the Bills, the Buffalo Bills, go to in all likelihood, let's be honest, defeat the LA Rams today. So thanks everybody for listening and tuning in, for supporting WrestleNomics, and I'll talk to you on Wednesday for Pollock and Thurston. Thanks.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.